This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
And we're back on Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. A quick pod getting to you prior to the start of the NFL draft. This is Wednesday, about 4 o'clock that we're recording this. Draft starts on Friday evening. Saints picked 14th overall. But do they? Do they stay there? Or do they trade up? Now, Mickey Loomis would tell you that it's a possibility they trade down. And I think, hey, maybe this is the year. Maybe this is finally the year that you get a trade down. But, and there's always a but, the Saints have traded up, I want to say, 26 consecutive times. The last time they traded down was in 2007. They traded from the second to the third round with the Lions. You'd have to go even further back from that to find the last time they traded down in the first round with a first round pick. But, hey, what is your philosophy on trading up? This is Mickey Loomis from his press conference on Wednesday, kind of going into that subject. Let's listen to it.
It might. Considering that, look, every year I say that we're willing to do either way, and then I'm like 15-0 going up, right? So it's kind of hard for me to keep saying that that I'm willing to trade back, and then I haven't done it for quite some time. So,
what do you think? Like, obviously, we know why you value trading up, but what is it that makes the concept of, oh, we'd like more lottery tickets, more swings at the plate? Why do you not feel like more is automatically better?
I think there are cases where dropping back makes some sense to get more picks. I just think in our case, most of the time, it's just been a move too far back. And, if you move back two or three or four spots, probably the level of player is similar. If you're moving back, 8 to 10, I think oftentimes you're dropping down a class. If you believe in your board, you believe in the evaluations that your staff have done, then it's just hard for me to grasp getting a lesser player talent-wise. And so I really believe in the evaluation process that we do, and that's what makes it more difficult.
So, yeah, we've talked about this on the pod before, and, I think this is just reinforcing that. One of the reasons I know that this is Mickey Loomis' philosophy is because every year we ask him about it, and every year he tells us the same thing. And I think it's a pretty clear indicator and a pretty good explainer as to why the Saints never trade down. And it was that last bit right there. It's Mickey Loomis views trading down, at least trading down a certain distance, as accepting a lesser player. You feel like, hey, if we draft here or we move up, we can get a player of this tier, of this talent level. If we move back, we are saying, hey, we're going to get maybe multiple players of a lesser talent level. But at the end of the day, they view it as you're getting a player of a lesser talent level. Now, what he said there was interesting because, well, what if you end up in a situation where you can move back to the 15th or you can move back to like the 18th, 19th pick and you still can feel like you get that guy? that's another question. And he also talked a good bit about, like, okay, sometimes when you trade up for a quarterback, there's a quarterback premium, right? It's not always the board. It's not the value of that pick versus the value of another pick. It's, hey, you want that quarterback? You're going to have to pay for him. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how that situation kind of develops this year. Now, I think it's about time that they adjust their draft philosophy to relate to their situation, which is you are not a serious title contender. And you're a playoff contender. Like, I think this team can be in the playoffs, but I don't think you're going to look at this team, at least in the preseason. Things can change in the season. Maybe you strike gold on a few picks and guys play at a level that you didn't really see last year, and you see a vision with the new offense, and maybe you do become a title contender. It's unlikely, but it could happen. But right now, in the draft, going into this next season, you cannot look at it that way. You have to be realistic about your situation, and I think it's about time they start accumulating assets. Now, that doesn't have to be in the first round. It could be in the second round, right? I think you want to get a third-round pick in this year's draft, but you can do that in a couple different ways. You can trade back in the second round, pick up an extra pick. You could, you know, trade back in the first round to pick up an extra pick. You could go in the back end of your draft board and move some of those assets up, pick up a third round pick. But I also think that you should be looking ahead and saying, hey, how can we accumulate assets for next year? How can we put ourselves in a better situation? So we're not going into the draft saying, hey, we want to trade up, but we don't have any pieces to throw at it. You want to trade up, get some assets first. You can't do that for this draft, but you can do that for next draft. You can do that for 2026. You can start picking up assets that you can push forward. And you know, you have 9 picks in this draft. 7 are on day 3. So we're gonna see. But he talked a little bit more about trading here. So let's hear it.
Are you actively looking at ways to get into rounds 3 and that big hole? Do you think about that? Like, how much are you thinking about the you know, from what is it, 45 to 150, whatever it is. I mean, that's a big gap.
Yeah, it's a big gap. I wouldn't say that we're spending a lot of time thinking about that right now. You know, the way the draft is structured currently is that, you know, we do the first round on Thursday, and then we have, you know, the second and third on Friday. And so then, you know, we have a whole evening, a whole day, really, to strategize about moving into the third and fourth round. And look, part of that depends upon who are the players available. Do we really want to move up? And look, when you have 4 fifths, that gives us an opportunity to bump, you know, take a couple of those and bump it up. But we won't be thinking about that until we know who the players are that are going to be available. Is there someone that we've got really graded high that has dropped down, and man, let's put a target on them and you know, find a way to go get that player, because that's what we've done historically, even in some of the later rounds. But that's not a process that you spend a lot of time right now. It's just there's so many variables. We're focused on, hey, what's going to happen in the first and second round right now with those first two picks.
When you go into the draft with, what is it, 7 day 3 picks, does that affect kind of how you evaluate the back end? Do you need to have a bigger pot of players that might be there with that much variance of who could be on board?
You know, I don't think it changes. I don't think it changes. I mean, we have a formula for how many players need to be on the board for each one of our picks, and it's never failed. So, that really hasn't changed much. I think what'll change is when we get to that day, when we get to day 3 and we've got all these picks, that hasn't been typically what we have, and who's to say that that's what we'll have when we get there?
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, so a few things there. You know, he talked about how you're not really looking at the day 3 trades in advance. And that makes sense to me. Like you can't really plan for a trade on day three until you kind of see how the board develops. That's kind of what you saw play out last year, right? The Saints kind of stood pat. They didn't really make any moves in the first 2 days of the draft, and they didn't have a ton of picks, but they stuck with it. And then on day three, before anything got going, you saw them trade up to the first pick of the fourth round for a guy who, now with James Hurst retiring, you know, you kind of look at like, okay, what does he have, right? And that's Nick Saldivari. They also traded up into the fourth round for Jake Haener. Both guys didn't play a snap last year, but they're guys that you expect to have a role, maybe make an impact this year. And we're going to find out a lot more about these guys in training camp, the preseason, et cetera. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not doing their due diligence. And I think one thing that Mickey definitely does at a higher rate than maybe some other GMs around the league is he's making calls on values in the first round, right? Saints are always prepared to move up in the first round. And I think they do their due diligence on moving back. They just don't realistically consider it maybe as much as they should. But what Mickey said they do is they call up and say, okay, what's it going to cost to get to 13? What's it going to cost to get to 12? What's it going to cost to get to 11? What's it going to cost to get to 10? And I think you're probably doing that to a lesser extent in the second round. He said he usually go 10 picks up, 10 picks back to see what the values would be and what's realistic. Now, having that information is helpful. Going to the, you know, that was my question in the second half, talking about, okay, all these seventh round picks or all these day three picks, you have seven of them. And the Saints have a process and they have a formula that, hey, we need to have this many picks, this many players that we're willing to pick so that when the board gets to us, one of those players is still there. It's Jeff Ireland's formula. They tweak it every year, but according to Mickey, it has never failed. They have never gotten in a situation where they got to their pick and there was not at least one player in that kind of cloud pod, whatever you want to call it, that they were willing to draft. I think one way that they have made sure that's the case is because they don't get to those picks. I mean, even last year, their sixth round pick, A.T. Perry, was a guy they traded Adam Trautman to get that selection. So I think you are looking at it and saying, we don't need to necessarily have dozens of extra options because of all of these picks that we have. And you can see it there. And I think he's just telling you, hey, we're not going to make seven picks on day three. Let's just be honest. Now, the question is, how early do you pull the trigger on some of these potential trades? Do you wait until day three and attack in the fourth round like you did last year? I think they're going to be very, very motivated to do that in round three this year. So maybe you aren't necessarily waiting until the second round is over to start looking at those trades, but you probably are waiting until the end of the first round to see who slipped and what the board is looking like in the second round before you make some of these decisions. I still think that the third round is where you're going to target. I still think that the trade I made in the mock is realistic. You traded your 3 fifth round comps, you traded one of your sixth rounders, and you traded a 2024 fourth rounder. I'm sorry, a 2025 fourth rounder to potentially go gut a guy in the third round. Again, mine was Mason Smith, but now knowing what we know about James Hurst, Christian Mahogany or a guard would make a ton of sense there too. But either way, that's kind of how they look at it, and that's how they're approaching a potential draft trade. Now, the one you look back at most recently is Adam Trautman. They traded the entire back half of their board in 2020 to go get him. I don't think you necessarily have to do that this year to get up into the third round. You could. Maybe if you include the entire back half of your board, you could get away without trading that future fourth. But I do think you need bodies, and I think this is a depth issue with this team that you need to start adding players. Now, one more quote we'll get into in this segment, and then we'll have another segment with some more specific quotes on some players, is about, okay, you got a new coaching staff. This is the first time in a long time, since 2006, that you are changing offensive systems. You've done it on the defensive side, but you have not done it on the offensive side. And so, okay, how do these new faces, these new voices impact the process? And how does the new offensive scheme impact the process? This is what he had to say about that.
Yeah, well, I think the process is still the same. I think we are maybe trying to think about it a little differently. We've got, a couple people from that haven't been with us, that are with us, you know, through this process. And so, I think we value their input, a little different view. plus, you know, the new coaching staff on the offensive side of the ball, they're all coming from, you know, they're coming from different places and they have different perspectives. And, you know, that's just good to have an infusion of different ideas.
How does that change the process with the new coaches? Just how's that conversation and just...
Yeah, it doesn't change the process. It's just, look, we value their opinion. We've always valued coaches' opinions. You know, when we're making these decisions relative to the draft and free agents and yet they're coming from different places where they've done it differently. And so, you know, we're trying to blend how we do it and what we ask of them with, you know, what they're used to. And it's been really good, though.
When you're changing offensive systems, the way it's the first time you've done it in quite some time, how much weight does that add in terms of, you know, the players you might look at as in terms of, okay, we need players that can do this to run this type of offense,
yeah,
as opposed to other years where it's been?
Well, I think it's more nuanced than it is just these wholesale differences. It's just the nuance of you know, this system and what these coaches want the players to do. And that's, you know, it's part of the learning process for us is, hey, what exactly do our coaches value in terms of what they're asking the players to do? But it's a lot more nuanced. I mean, look, we got guys in our building that can do exactly what they want to do and some better than others. And so that's part of the process that our coaches have to go through when they get these players on the field and they start talking about, you know, how they want to play and how they want them to play, and there'll be these little subtle differences.
There's a few things there that he went through. One is like the process itself. What is changing relative to how you evaluate and how you make decisions on draft day? I don't think that's going to change a ton, but you have a bunch of new people in place in terms of Clint Kubiak, Andrew Giannoco, right? John Benton, Rick Dennison, a lot of these offensive coaches that, you know, they've been around different draft methodologies, and they probably have opinions about, okay, how should we approach it? And you're getting insight from them. Now, I don't think you're going to change a ton there. But what I do think is going to affect this process specifically, maybe more so this year than another year or next year even, is when you're changing offensive systems. Just think of it like this. Like it's different because it's obviously different, but it's a little easier to visualize. Say your defensive system is changing from a 4-3 to a 3-4. Or you're changing from a more man cornerback scheme to a zone cornerback scheme, right? There are certain players who do that better than others. Now, there are some players who could do it either way, right? But for example, on the defensive side, if you're going from a 4-3 to a 3-4, you now need outside linebackers where before you needed defensive ends. Some defensive ends can shift into that, but is that their prime usage, or are you trying to pound a square peg into a round hole? So I think this year on offense, with a lot of these offensive picks, it becomes difficult to maybe evaluate what price tag you would put on one player versus another if it is a position where you don't feel like you have the players there that you need to run the system the way you do. Now, tight end is a really interesting one. Does Clint Kubiak feel like the tight ends in the building can do the things he needs them to do, right? How about running back? You know, how about offensive line in terms of the types of blocking that you're asking people to do that the system prior to this did not require? I think that's going to be, you know, if there's kind of weird picks in this draft or you reach for a guy at a spot that you're like, well, why did they do that? I think at the end of the day, you're going to come back and there's going to be at least one or two picks that are scheme fit picks that may have not been on the board or may have not been as high on the board previously that are high on the board now. And you're going to say, well, why did they make that pick? And I think that's going to be why. And I think that's what you're getting into is you need to get input from Clint Kubiak, Andrew Giannoco, all these guys to evaluate where you need to make those changes. And it's not necessarily about the quality at the position. It is about a skill set that you need at certain positions. And I just think it's going to be interesting. We're going to look at this draft on Monday and we're going to say, okay, what were these picks? What were the fit picks that you made? And I think it's going to be a big part of it. But all right, this is Inside Black and Gold. We're going to wrap up. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about exceptions. Like, what does it take to pick a guy that is outside of your prototype? Because I've had a good answer on that. Also talked about Ryan Ramczyk, Marshawn Lattimore. We're going to get into it. This is Inside Black and Gold. I'm Jeff Nowak. Stick around.